the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
You're nodding a lot, like, yep.
I'm pretending you have music right now. Everyone else is doing the same thing. They're pretending.
Yeah.
Except some of them don't have to, because they listen to this not live. So yeah, I'm here. I'm here to talk about video games, although we didn't play a whole lot. I have a funny story, though.
We were talking a little bit on the pre-show. We didn't necessarily play a lot of new stuff, but we definitely either wrapped up some games that we'd started already and we'd already talked about on the show, or we're playing things like Mario Kart, which, you know, Mario Kart is Mario Kart, not much else to say. So we're kind of like looking at the new stuff that we could get our hands on this week, and we're like, huh, a little bit dry this week. I mean, we did have, so Prey actually officially released, right? Since the last time we recorded, I think it came out, what, Thursday or Friday?
Yeah.
May 5th? 4th or 5th? I can't remember.
5th. It was a Friday release, and honestly, kind of came out of nowhere. It's under the new Bethesda rules of no review copies until the day before, so everyone was like, I don't know, try the demo. We haven't had a chance to beat it yet. It's getting favorable reviews, which is nice, but I mean, I think the game, I don't know how well it's doing. Personally, I didn't know anything about it.
Is another one I think that we saw in our like anticipated games of 2017, because as soon as I started playing it, I was like, oh yeah, this is the cool, like, smoky kind of gooey bad guys, like little black bad guy things in space.
Yeah.
So once I started playing it, I was like, oh, I remember seeing trailers for this. And I can't remember if it was at E3 or if it was in that most anticipated games show that we did near the end of last year. But one way or another, as soon as I started playing it, it like clicked with me. And I was like, oh, right. And I mean, Bethesda, I'm such a fan of Bethesda games. So, I mean, I totally forgot about it until literally today, and you were like, try the demo, and I was like, oh yeah, this thing, right? But you were right, it flew totally under the radar for me, at least through the first half of 2017. So I guess you weren't really excited about it either then. You were just kind of in the same boat as me, like, oh right, this game.
I needed something. So sometimes with this show, it's certainly not a rut. It's just a lot of things have come out lately. We're playing a lot of the same things. We could certainly talk about how great it is to cross the finish line and then get hit by a blue shell, as opposed to the opposite. But, you know, we want to bring fresh new experiences. And for me, this weekend, it was basically I played Prey, and I barely scraped by a chance to go see Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was this close to coming home and buying that Telltale game, and I thought, no. I'm going to be strong.
No,
I am not going to give into marketing synergy, because that's what it felt like as I hovered over the buy button. And then it felt really gross. I threw up a little in my mouth. That's not true. I'm going a little too far into the deep end here, but it that's what I was going to play. I'll try it out and play it. But then, you know, I got my hands on this Prey demo, and I felt instantly like I was playing the Half-Life 3 that we will never get. Let's all take Half-Life 3 and whatever we think it will be or whatever it should be, take it and just, you know, flush it down. It's not going to happen. Valve is making way too much money from Steam, Dota 2, insert cash grab here. Half-Life 3 is not happening. Portal 3 is not happening. Exactly. Yeah. And they're not going to make another BioShock game. Mm-hmm. They're just not going to do it. And I think this is the closest we're going to get to another one of those, and it felt, even though it was just the opening hour, it still felt like very much like the opening to Half-Life. Really trippy too. Not at all like the old Prey game that I played, I don't know when, like a long time ago, on Xbox 360, which,
well, and I think this is okay. So I think this is why I kind of, it went underneath my radar, is because it's not a new franchise, right? Like, this is an existing IP. There have been Prey games in the past, right?
Yeah, and this is the thing. So have you played the original?
No, I haven't. And this is the thing. Like, I didn't play it when it came out before. So I think when I saw Prey popping up in my Steam and stuff, I was just like, you know, I'm familiar with this franchise. I'm not interested in a new entry. I wasn't interested in it before years ago, so why would I be interested in it now, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And gave it literally none of my time, because the like the Steam image is basically like a black picture, like a black square with the Prey like logo or whatever it is. It kind of looks like a T and is kind of gold with some embellishments and stuff, and then it just says like Prey in gray letters above it. Like, it's very, very minimalist in terms of like a trailer poster. So I was just kind of like, eh, I know I've heard that name before. I wasn't interested then, so I'm just going to move on. And that was a huge mistake, because like you said, this game is very like, invokes feelings of BioShock and like, which I loved, and just the whole like, oh man, you live in some sort of, something that's, you're kind of cut off from the rest of the world and isolated somehow, and then something's gone horribly, horribly wrong, and you're the sole survivor, but there's these crazy monster things. Like, it's just, I really enjoy that kind of a game. So I think it, like, it does evoke thoughts of bio and feelings of BioShock, especially with the neural implant things that you do.
Yeah,
it's like you can neural implant to like gain skills and stuff, which is very similar to like plasmids in BioShock. And so they are, they, it invokes similar feelings without being like a carbon copy. So, man, I know why it slipped under, excuse me, under my radar, and that's totally on me. But yeah, I'm actually going to pick up the game, because like you, I played the demo and I was like, oh man, this is super fun.
Yeah.
And, except there's, okay, and maybe this is me with like a weird sound mix or something, but like, do you like the, because there's kind of this like constant, almost like high pitched, like, like weird sound going on all the time. And I think it's supposed to be like, it's supposed to make you afraid, or it's supposed to be part of the jump scare, but then it just like lasts too long. And then all of a sudden it'll just stop. And then it's like silent again. And I just, the sounds of the game, I really didn't like.
Yeah, there's a, so there's a horror element to the game, which seems to be kind of a theme for the show in the last month. A lot of horror.
I was going to say, that is all that Steam is recommending to me, by the way, are horror games, because of me playing like Edith Finch and Little Nightmares and Outlast and something else. Now it's just like, you like indie horror. Yeah. Here are all of the indie horror things on Steam. Guys, there's a lot of indie horror things on Steam. Spoiler alert,
80% of them are
developers are messed up people, let me tell you. I've seen some weird things in the last few days on my Steam account.
Yeah, and 80% of those indie horror games are all Five Nights at Freddy's spinoffs. True story.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, the music in this is very like, it's trying, it's part of the atmosphere trying to scare you, yeah. I find. And there's the really, so I don't want to like spoil some of the moments that happen. I mean, it's early on in the game, but this is a demo. Everyone should check it out. I'll say that. But there's no excuse.
It's a console only demo, right? Because I tried to find it on Steam and couldn't. So it's I got it on Xbox. I think it's only Xbox, right? I don't think there is a demo on PlayStation. I don't even know if you can get this game on PlayStation, actually.
I think you can. Yeah, I saw the demo on the PlayStation store, but I mean, I played it on Xbox as well. It's made by the guys who, it's made by the same studio that did Dishonored and Dishonored 2. And so there's some stuff.
Oh, it is for PlayStation. I just looked it up. It is for PlayStation 4.
Good.
Confirmed.
Yeah. So there's some things in this game where some things happen early on in the game that set it up. It feels very much Half-Life, very much BioShock. But what the core tenet of it are these alien being things, like you said, made out of like a goo slash smoke type thing. Mm-hmm. But they're all mimics so far. They mimic objects. So I think that music as you're going through is calm, calm, calm. And then as soon as one of the mimics like snap out of like being a chair or just a random object in the room, the music kicks into like psycho, you know, and very, very high pitched, very violent, just like, oh my God, you're going to die. And then the things, you know, scurry away and then shift back into something. And the music still sticks with you to kind of indicate that, yeah, you're still surrounded by mimics. You need to kind of be cautious. And I do agree with you. It kind of stuck around a little too long and made the game very, very loud, a little too loud for my taste.
I had to turn our stereo like way, way down to the point that if I were to turn Netflix on, I wouldn't be able to hear it. Like, I just felt like it was constantly this invasive noise.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I get it. Like, there's a bad guy, or, you know, like, I got jump scared or whatever, but it's dead now. Like, just stop. It just seemed very invasive into my space and not in an enjoyable, like, ooh, goosebumps kind of way. And a, like, okay, I get it. Stop it now kind of way.
Yeah. And that aside, like, I kind of dug the sort of mechanic of these aliens sort of being these weird just random objects in the room.
God, yeah, I love that so much. That's and really so well cool. Done,
you know, just sort of very seamless in the way that these mimics can transform in front of your eyes, and kind of, and it's always setting up these jump scares. I mean, it didn't really get me as I was playing through, because I guess I had played out last, and I've built this like thick skin, knock on wood.
Tolerance to jump scares.
I guess. And but in this game, it felt more like just not really annoying, but like my character is like, oh, god damn, I knew I should have took a wrench to that chair. I knew it. and that's where it kind of, you get your feelings of Half-Life and Bioshock, and that the first weapon they give you is legitimately just a random tool, and you get to use it, and it's amazing. And you get to choose whether you want to be a male or female character at the beginning, which is, I think, awesome.
But they still, it's so funny because it's a first person game,
mm-hmm.
and they give you a gender neutral name. You're Morgan, which can go either way. So
yeah, it doesn't change a whole lot.
It doesn't change anything really. Like, sometimes you can see your shadow, and then so you're, I don't know. I picked the female character, but like I say, it really doesn't matter.
No, I even thought I was playing as the female Morgan, and I even felt like sometimes when I get hit, I sounded kind of like a man. So
I thought when I reached up for stuff a couple of times, I was like, my arm's kind of manly.
Yeah, it's the spacesuit. I swear, it's the spacesuit.
Yeah. Probably.
I feel like we've only scratched the surface, but when you get to the end,
100%.
When you get to the end of the demo, or the end of sort of what you can play in this opening hour, it sets up this big open area that is gated by exploration and finding specific items, and that a lot of rooms are locked, but you can access every floor. You know, you just have to find the keys to those doors, and they illustrate that really well at the beginning, and it feels like there's a bit of a mystery there, and it kind of feels like there's some like portal in there too, where you're being held against your will, but you're not quite sure why, and you're trying to figure it out and escape at the same time. So it mixes a lot of games that we adore that companies have no interest in making anymore. So it's kind of awesome that they've done something like this. And it's not at all like the Prey that I played back on Xbox 360, where you played as a Native American who has his girlfriend abducted by aliens, and you get abducted as well, and then you have to save your girlfriend. It's kind of a very typical video game story with some non-typical elements thrown in. Like, there's some Native American elements. I'm not quite sure if they were offensive. They might have been, probably were, you know, in the sense that they probably didn't have anyone consulting on this. And you go to, okay, I'm just gonna straight up say it. You go to the spirit world, which seems like, if not done correctly, could be pretty offensive. This doesn't have any of this. This is only this is common in name.
I was gonna say original Prey, but maybe that's not even the right word, but previous entries into the franchise.
If you have a trademark for a cool video game name like Prey, wouldn't you want to use it?
I definitely would.
Exactly. I think that's what's happening here.
This doesn't seem to be kind of tied into any of that. This seems to be its own kind of standalone, completely different game. So if you like Half-Life and Portal and Bioshock and kind of titles like that, then go and check this out, because we had a really good time just with the demo. So if you're unsure, that's the other thing. You do have, they say it's like the first hour, but if you're like me and you're kind of tentative in horror situations and you're also really slow and want to kind of look around, and then you like touch something and then it turns into a bad guy and all of a sudden you're in combat and then you have to go back. I also read all the emails and listen to all the audio logs and stuff. So, I mean, I played an hour and I didn't even get through the demo. So the first hour of gameplay is kind of subjective. It depends how you play. There's definitely quite a lot of stuff in this demo. Lots of workstations, lots of emails you can read, lots of background on the story you can get. So if you're unsure, go check out the console exclusive demo. So head over to your Xbox or your PlayStation, check it out. But you can also pick it up on your PC if you are so inclined. Ryan, you did play something on your PC this week. What are you into?
Yeah, so I jumped back into Heroes of the Storm, as we talked about a few weeks ago, with the launch of the 2.0 update. The Nexus Challenge is going on, so I figured, hey, I'd jump in and check that out. And, you know, something that we discussed a few weeks ago is that the 2.0 update doesn't change, like, the core gameplay.
Right.
So you're still playing the same Heroes gameplay. You know, I got a bit more time in Hanamura, the new map, which is lane-based, lane objective-based. So it's kind of like Towers of Doom, where you have to capture and move certain elements to actually score hits on the core. And, man, it's confusing. Like, the payloads launch, and then you have to, and I get this, I'll get to the point where I'm confused. you guide the payloads, similar to an Overwatch, which I think is a fantastic transition to this game. Very well done. But then sometimes when you score those payloads, they're worth 1 point. Other times they're worth multiple points. And I was playing with some friends in the Discord. I think it was Blood Anubis, and we were playing. And someone in our chat goes, okay, this next one's going to be a three hitter, so we win. And I'm like, I'm looking at the payload. I'm looking at my UI. I'm like, well, they've been worth 1 point for the rest of the game. Why is this one worth three? Like, what's the difference? And there's no visual. And I am a casual Heroes player, so I know there are folks who are listening that are saying, Ryan, someone had an item that shoots a dragon.
The fourth one is always three shots or blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's they get empowered, and it's like, I agree. I don't 100% understand how that map works, but basically, I just go by, you know, like, get your payload, stop the other team from getting their payload, and eventually, if you keep doing that, you will win.
Yeah, and it was fun. Like, I had
regardless
a lot of, fun.
Of how much each payload is worth.
Yeah, there are, and that's just it. There are, like, merc camps you can get, and the merc camps do more than just give you XP and give you someone to push. They actually disappear, and I think they give you an item that you can then use. And maybe someone got, like, the, you know, the dragon that shoots out and goes kind of thing. And I don't know. I haven't played Overwatch in a while. I don't really know what it sounds like anymore. Is it Taquito Grill or whatever? It's been a while, but. Yeah, you play Heroes, you unlock a bunch of stuff. I unlock the D.Va police skin. I kind of like D.Va, so I'll play as police D.Va whenever I jump back into Overwatch.
I need to get in and play, actually, because I haven't played any of my, like, with friends games or whatever. I played the very first week that 2.0 came out, so I got all the Genji stuff, and then I haven't played since. So am I screwed now because it's technically Wednesday, or because I know you had to play all of the quests, but do they kind of stack? Are they, or do I have to, like, finish week two's quest to see week three's quest, or what's going on?
You have to finish week two to see week three. So when I jumped in Friday night and played with some folks, I did week one, and then when I jumped in Saturday night, I did week two. So now if I were to jump in tonight or tomorrow night, I would be in the week three challenge. And I think even if you waited until the very end, you have until May 22nd to finish the challenges. They just unlock a new series of quests, or one new quest every week. So
right, okay.
Yeah, so D.Va just
launched.
So
it'll still be available to me. I just have to go in and do week two before I can do week three, which week three did come out yesterday.
Yeah, and week three is a bunch of D.Va, like, sprays and stuff. Mm-hmm. So not anything. I mean, unless you're big into D.Va and you want to spread that D.Va love across the map, I still think the sprays, while interesting, don't. I always forget to use them in key moments, like in the trailers, where if you kill someone, you could show them how cool you are by hitting T. I forgot to do it, and I killed a lot of people. But it's good. I like it. And honestly, as I was playing through and swapping heroes, I was finding, ooh, this hero is almost close. And you get a new loot box every time a hero levels up. So I was playing for maybe a couple hours, and every time I won a game and a hero leveled up, because there's so many heroes to progress now, you would get a loot box. At least that's what it felt like. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just, I don't know. in comparison to Blizzard's other loot box game, Overwatch, I feel like I'm being rewarded for progressing much more in Heroes, and it feels good, even if, like we talked about a few weeks ago, when you open a box and it's just mostly garbage. It still feels good to open that box.
At least you get that box of garbage more often.
Exactly.
Than not.
Exactly. Boxes of garbage. And then, you know what? If you don't like the garbage, you can re-roll it for slightly shinier garbage. And sometimes you get a skin, and sometimes you get a hero. And I usually find when I get a skin, it's like, huh, I would never buy that, but it's nice that I have it. And that feels okay. That feels good. I feel like I'm being kind of negative.
I don't really know how I feel about that, but I have feelings. They're in there somewhere.
I feel like I know it's not like, oh, joy, it's amazing, but it feels somewhat just satisfying to open these boxes and get things that I might not ever buy.
Now, feels better than getting punched in the gut.
Sure, like aiming low a little bit, but like I think it feels better than what was there before, which was nothing. So it's better than nothing. And I'm not necessarily asking Blizzard to give us, basically say, hey, you earned a level, here's a loot box, what do you want in it? We'll give it to you. Like, I know that's not how this works, and I don't want it to work that way, but it does feel extra special when you do unlock something in a loot box that you actually do want, and they've built in the reroll mechanic to kind of feel like you can work your way around the gacha mechanics. But I realize as I'm explaining all this, just like we did a couple weeks ago, it still feels like it still feels like you're wiggling around these really not so fun things. And you don't have to buy loot boxes. You can just earn them. So I know I'm not saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think we need to go down that whole road again, because if you guys do want to hear our discussion on basically the new currency system and watering down of the cosmetics and Heroes of the Storm that happened with 2.0, I think that was back on episode, I want to say like 266 or 267. It was a couple weeks ago anyways.
Yeah.
We did go in depth in this, so I don't want to do it again. But I'm glad that at least you're in the game and you're having fun. And I would expect you to, because like you say, 2.0 didn't actually change any of like the core hero mechanics. You know, we got a new hero, we got a new map, and that was awesome. And but in terms of the 2.0 update, it didn't actually change the gameplay. It just changed the reward system.
You just have to remember to hop in or at least check like the Blizzard update news feed to see what items are for sale, what items are featured. And if it's something that you know you want, you jump in and pick it up and use it. And that's what I did. When I was in there, I was like, oh, I really want that skin for Ariel because I know I like that hero and I like that Overwatch themed skin for her, so I'm going to get it. And I bought it with the gems that I earned by just being a player for the last couple of years, and I was satisfied with that. And now if you go in, there'll be a new set of items that you can buy. So, you know, it's just you gotta kind of work your way around the new rules, as opposed to before, where you're just like, I don't need to buy that now.
Not what you wanted.
Exactly. So I certainly see the issue. And also, like, it automatically applies some of the emotes in your chat. So I did like a smiley face emote, and then all of a sudden my smiley face turned into like a smiling Tyrael, and I was kind of like, huh, I didn't mean to do that. But again, I don't know how I feel.
My new smiley face.
I guess it's Tyrael. I love that. He's happy.
I love that you're chatting and the thing you discover is the smiley face. It's so Ryan and so Canadian of you.
Well, I mean, a lot of people were going like, good luck, have fun and all that fun stuff. But, you know, I don't think there's any like rude emotes. So,
well, no, because they're all Blizzard emotes, right? Yeah. They're not fan submitted or anything like that. So,
no, they're not.
But speaking of being smiley and appreciative, wanted to thank a new patron this week, Nick. Thank you so much for supporting the show over at patreon.com/thegamersin. We have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review, who says The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. So we thank The Geek Review very much for supporting us over on Patreon. Again, that's patreon.com/thegamersin. This week, we are going to talk about managing expectations and kind of who is responsible for keeping your expectations in check when it comes to a new game. So this kind of discussion is based around my experience with Little Nightmares. And it actually, our playthrough and my comments, I guess, last week or the week before, kind of sparked a comment in our Discord. This one comes from Drowlfur. Again, the Discord is bit.ly/TGI Discord if you guys want to go and join in the conversation. He said, I listened to the episode and I feel like if you feel like you're playing the game wrong, it is more on the game developers that either and they misadvertised it or are not giving you enough in-game to figure out what you're supposed to do. Also, in games that have a high horror tension style, I find inactive rooms are usually revisited with something on your tail or having done something to change them. So, I did play some more Little Nightmares, and I also ended up kind of like looking it up because I wanted to see, like, I just looked up a walkthrough to kind of see if I had missed something. I also watched a video of somebody being like, here's my theory on what the story is, and I was like, as soon as I saw, like, here's my theory about what the story is, I was kind of like, oh, no. Like, facepalm. Like, oh, man. So, basically, I didn't miss anything.
Okay.
There are just big empty rooms with no puzzle, no interactions, no nothing. It's just kind of, I don't know.
Atmosphere? Like, they're just there to...
Yeah, they're just kind of there. So, I was even more confused kind of by that, and then it kind of got me thinking about the game in general, because it was one of my most anticipated titles for 2017. I was really excited about it, and then when I actually got my hands on it and I was playing it, I thought it was going to be a, like, I knew that from a mechanical gameplay perspective, I knew what I was getting into, but I thought that it was going to tell me a really cool story. And because I'm such a big fan, I'm wearing a shirt right now, actually, this Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, I'm such a big Tim Burton fan, and it really seemed to be that kind of a style of something. And I kind of like that offbeat weirdness. So I was excited about what story they were going to tell me within that aesthetic. And then there wasn't any. Like, it was literally just like, you're a little kid, and there's these nightmarish kind of figures, and there's some puzzles for you to solve, and there's some platforms for you to jump between. But generally, like, there's some chase scenes and stuff, but the actual, like, story of the game, there's no voiceover, there's no subtitles, there's no nothing. It's non-existent. Like, there isn't a story. There's like two or three like characters that they kind of introduce, and you can get some of a semblance of what's going on just based on your surroundings, but there's definitely nothing like substantial there. It's just like, can you escape, yes or no? Okay, you're done.
Interesting. So so you spoiled the game for yourself, basically. Like, you saw
basically,
the ending.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, I spoiled the game for myself because I didn't make it all the way through, mostly because I just lost interest.
Right.
Because I did play some more, and I kept playing through it really, really carefully and really slowly, and I was trying to interact with everything in the room, and, like, nothing was really happening. And the spots that were puzzles, I actually found them to be very straightforward. So they weren't even, like, super-duper tricky. The ones that took me more than one time to solve were generally things that involved me, like, timing a jump properly. And if you miss it, you die, and then you start over. So, you know, like, some of them were punishing, but from a mechanics perspective, as opposed to, like, a challenging puzzle perspective.
Right.
So... I kind of lost interest in the game, and then went back to it and was like, all right, well, I feel like I expressed on the show a couple weeks ago, I felt like I was missing something. Like, I had just overlooked some, you know, like, I hadn't tripped the right thing, and there were story beats missing, and you can infer some things from some of the atmospheres and stuff, but again, it's all fan... Like, it's basically fans trying to project a story onto a cool setting as opposed to a game actually giving you a story. And so I don't really know if this is my problem for having like expectations based on trailers, or if this is the game developers that maybe marketed it in a way that was, because like they did crazy big marketing for this game. Like it wasn't just the trailers. They had, I think at Gamescom, they had people dressed up in costumes. They had like people in the creepy chef costumes, and the there was a guy in a costume for a character that actually didn't even end up making it into the game. But like they like, and that you like walked into this room and there was like all these portraits on the walls and stuff, and like they went all out with advertising for this game. And yeah, it just, all of the advertising that they did very much made it feel like there would be some like creepy, weird horror something story to it. And then there just kind of wasn't. So it was a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whose fault that is. And I'm not sure how you go about like managing those expectations as a gamer. Like, should I be upset at the makers of Little Nightmares? Or should I be like, ah, Jocelyn, come on. You should have looked into it more before you picked up the game.
Okay. Well, that's a lot to unpack. And
yeah, sorry.
It's fine. I just kind of went, bleh. It's all good. It's a Jocelyn tradition to split. So basically, I do want to say that blaming the developers is a tough call. Like there was a news story that came out today where a lot of commenters would blame the developers, and really when it comes to marketing a game and publishing a game, you got to look at the publishers, you got to look at the PR company.
Okay. So, yeah, when I say developers, then I think maybe what I really should be saying is not necessarily the developers. I'm not thinking of the guys coding. I'm thinking of who made the decisions that they made to present at Gamescom, to put what scenes in trailers, and you know, how to frame those trailers.
Yeah.
And you're right. That's not developers. That's PR. That's advertising.
That being said, I don't know what the setup was for Little Nightmares, whether it was, sometimes if it's an indie game, the developers are the PR. I think this one's a little bit higher in terms of its, you know, pedigree. So it probably did have a marketing company handle what was going on. And you know, sometimes selling a game is not about whether it's good or not. It's about portraying it in a way that makes people want to buy it. Yeah. And I think in this instance, for your specific scenario, that was what happened. They sold the game to you without requiring, without asking you to do a little bit more research to see like, well, what is this game? Because the reviews for it have been kind of like, you know, average, I would think, from what I've seen. And to me, I mean, mostly I skipped on this game because I think I was still playing Outlast at the time, and I knew you wanted to pick it up. So I was like, well, I'll let Jocelyn handle this one. And I think I read a couple of reviews and I'm like, I'll maybe revisit it when it goes on sale or something. And it was totally my game. But, you know, I'm getting strong, like, Yarny vibes from this game, you know, and that they portray it as this side-scrolling adventure with puzzles, and it's all, except it's quite the opposite. It's cute and cuddly instead of scary and horrible. That game suffered from the same thing, in that it was kind of bleh, it was kind of boring, and the reviews reflected that. So it's interesting for Little Nightmares that It shows why reviews are important. Not to say that reviews are there to basically stop a game from doing well. They're more there to educate gamers and people of any nature, whether it's movies, comics, whatever, to kind of say, is this worth your time and your money and any other factor that you want to apply to it? And I think that for some people, they read the reviews for Little Nightmares and say, perfect, I want to walk through a Tim Burton concept art. This sounds great. And that's enough for them. And I think you look at the opposite scenario where Prey didn't have any reviews and they just drop a demo and say like, boom, you know, that weird like salt gif that they have. That's what they did. They just dropped a little demo. Console exclusive for some reason. I don't understand. As far as I know, Prey plays fine on PC, but there are different ways to market a game. And I think with Prey, they took the sit back and, you know,
let the game speak for itself almost.
Exactly. A little bit. But I still feel like reviews are important, and it would have been nice to have reviews at launch and probably would have helped the game in the long run. But in this instance with Little Nightmares, it feels like they kind of put the marketing before, you know, kind of educating people on what this game is. And there's nothing worse than playing through a game that should have a story and then doesn't portray it in any way. And Inside was kind of a game like that, where it portrayed this world, but at least they portrayed it in a way that kind of showed a story. Like, you could gather the story that they were trying to tell. It wasn't, you know, dun dun dun, this happened. It was more just you could see it in the background and make assumptions and fill in the gaps. But it sounds like with Little Nightmares,
they Inside, it was more like they gave you enough,
yes,
so that you could fill in the gaps and you could build the world, and the developer was giving you kind of just enough information to lead you down a path and kind of let you tell your own story. But still, they, you know, kind of created a world, and like, it's really difficult, because it's not like Little Nightmares is a blank screen. Like, Little Nightmares has a world as well, but it's like Inside was kind of guided your brain in a specific direction, whereas Little Nightmares is just kind of like, this is our window dressing around a puzzle, and there's nothing really else to it, because it's like there isn't too much going on. I don't know. It's very, very hard for me to explain without, you know, going into too much detail about, you know, what exactly happens in the game. But I'm legitimately disappointed in this one, and I feel really bad, because I really thought that, like, the other games on my most anticipated list kind of leading up to this one were very much like, oh, that one looks pretty cool, but really, like, Little Nightmares is the one I can't wait for. It's going to be so good. And then, you know, like, I played some of the other ones, like Sexy Brutalis. It was so good. And then so I was like, oh, man, if this one that I wasn't that excited about was this good, I can only imagine how good Little Nightmares is going to be. Right. And so, I mean, I feel like that at least is on me, and, you know, like, getting excited about something that's coming and, you know, comparing it to other games and my expectations and everything else. And like, all of that is on me, because I was like, oh yeah, you know, compared to these other games, this is going to be even better. And then there's kind of a game can't help but fail in that kind of a setting, right?
Yeah. You've almost, it's too big for its britches, right? You can't overbuild something, like the newest Mass Effect. Like, 5 years of waiting. I think they announced that they were making another one, not, I think, a couple months after they finished they did the Citadel DLC. They said, like, look forward to more Mass Effect adventures from the new Montreal team. And it was just, you had 4 years of this percolating excitement to building up to what that game would be. And, you know, that game had issues, but I still think that it fell short of expectations that a lot of people had. And putting... You know, we all have free time, and sometimes in that free time we think about things that we want to do in the near future, and sometimes those are games, right? And when you think about it, you usually always think about the positive, right? You don't think, oh man, I can't wait to see how crappy this game is. Like, that's not a way to live. Some people on Reddit live that way, but I don't think they're happy. They may enjoy a game more when they, you know, oh, this isn't that bad, this isn't the angry gif I've been posting for the last 6 months, this is pretty good. I read it. Anyways, I feel like you have to strike a balance, and I don't think the balance is going in the opposite direction and shutting your brain off and thinking like, okay, I'm not going to look at any trailers for this, and I'm just going to see it because I know I want to see it, or I know I want to play it. That doesn't make the game better either. You might go in with zero expectations, or you might go in with high expectations. Like, a lot of people do that with movies, where they, it's like, oh, there's a new Star Wars Episode 8 trailer. Like, well, I'm not going to watch it because I know I'm going to go see it. And I want to, what is it, they call it, the Unsullied or something. And it's, you're going to go see it. Of course you're going to go see it. But you're setting yourself up to think this is going to be the best movie ever only because you didn't watch trailers. Like, I don't see the logic there. Like, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure if they end up, I don't know, they get lucky twice and the third time they just fail miserably. Like, I think you have to go in educated, but to a level where you're satisfied. Like, I think that's what happened with me and Mass Effect, where I saw the first trailer and the first reveal, and it was kind of like, okay, I am looking forward to this game. It looks like it has the dialogue wheel. The animations look a little stiff. And then I shut it off. I didn't look at it anymore. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get it. And then when I got it, it's like, oh, yeah, the animations are still pretty stiff, but there's the dialogue wheel. This is pretty cool. and that's sort of how I rolled with that game. I don't know if there's a game coming out in the near future that I'm really hyping myself up for. But I can certainly think of a game that I know I want to play, but haven't seen a lot for it. And like a lot of the Switch games coming out, like Splatoon 2 and ARMS, like I don't know anything about how those games are going to play. Like I have an idea. Obviously we played them. But I'm not thinking they're going to be the second coming in video games, right? Like it's ARMS and Splatoon, but
yeah.
I don't know. You have to manage your expectations, because right now there are companies that live and die based on selling you a product, and you have to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And you kind of just have to use what they give you as an information tool rather than like a hype, get hyped tool. That's why I don't like that get hyped. It's like, no, let's all stay calm.
Let's have a measured reaction to everything that's thrown in front of us.
I mean, there are times when you can get hyped. Like, you know, if a game does really well and you're excited about it, then yeah, like get hyped. And then especially if you enjoy that game, you know, but I think that getting hyped because they released a marketing trailer, I think that's kind of, that's, you're asking for this specific scenario, right? Where you were really excited for the game. And I saw your excitement because the trailers were basically like, hey, Jocelyn, do you want to play a Tim Burton movie? And you said yes.
I do indeed want to play a Tim Burton movie. So then, yeah, when there was no Tim Burton story to go along with the Tim Burton aesthetic, I was definitely let down.
Yeah. And I mean, that's actually a really good way to put it, is just they didn't tell you the story because you probably thought, well, they're just not going to spoil it for me.
Coy. I thought they were keeping it, you know, close to the vest. Turns out, nope.
So is it like a kid? Like, is just a kid in a nightmare? Like, or is that like a huge spoiler? Or is it, you, well, say there's no story.
The thing. Like, if I said, yeah, it's a kid in a nightmare, that would be a spoiler, except for,
okay.
Like, it's just a kid who has to move through a series of rooms and there's monsters.
See, I guess, I mean, monsters, am I right?
There's
a new Fire Emblem game coming out in a week and a half, and the current sort of managing expectations on that is that, and I was reading an article about it, how it's supposed to be different. They've been very vocal about how it's different. It's a remake of, you know, the classic sequel to a Japanese franchise is always different. Like Zelda 2, very different from Zelda 1. Mario 2, very different from Mario 1 in the States. And then you look at Fire Emblem, like the second one that came out was very different. It had dungeon crawling and exploration. And the one of the big changes that they're not talking about is the sort of romance and support character conversation. And to a lot of folks, that's very important to them. And they're not talking about it. And I think anyone going into that game thinking, well, if they're not going to talk about it, it's probably in there. Like you're setting yourself up for... kind of a
big disappointment.
Exactly. And I think at that point, if that's important, now I know Val, you know, in our Discord and our chat room has been very vocal about how if this game doesn't have those components, then she feels like it's probably not one of the games in that series that she wants to play. So I think for her, I said, you know, just wait for reviews. And that's probably one of the first things they'll address, because Nintendo isn't talking about it. They'll probably say something like, yeah, it's not in there, but there's, you know, a little bit of it in there. Like, you can't marry anyone, but you can talk to them. You can be nice.
It just doesn't go anywhere.
Do stuff.
Well, I mean, it's funny, because that was one of the things that I was so confused and, I guess, like, happy and also sad in Horizon.
Right.
Because I had all these people hitting on me, and I was like, ooh, who am I going to get to pick for my romantic interest? And then there was no romantic interest part.
Really?
I was like, oh. spoiler. Have you still not finished that game,
no.
Ryan? Damn it.
It's funny, because we were talking and I was texting you and I said, have you not finished Mass Effect yet? We need to talk about, like, the little bits of spoilers that we're not going to get any closure for, because Kotaku was mean. I figured you'd come back with, have you finished Horizon yet? It's like, no. I haven't touched it. I actually, you know, I did quite the opposite. I bought two other PlayStation games that I haven't touched. I'm getting really good at just weighing down my hard drive with extra bits that I'm never going to load up. It's awesome.
Well, maybe we should make some sort of pact that we'll stop buying little other games, and we'll finish what we started with Horizon and with Mass Effect. Oh my god, I can't believe you haven't finished that yet. Hurts my heart, Ryan. Hurts my heart.
It's a good game, I hear, from people on the show. 50% of the show is raving about Horizon. Mine is just theory. I want to play it. It's just always like, I've got like an hour. Do I really want to spend that hour like trying to like figure out how to make cave woman person? That
is exactly how I feel about Mass Effect. I'm like, okay, I have a couple hours. Even like 2 hours doesn't seem like enough. Like any time that I've actually played Andromeda, it's because I've been able to sit down and put a day into it. And if I don't have that kind of time, I just don't turn it on. I go play, you know, my dailies in Warcraft, or you know, a couple games of Heroes, or a couple games of Hearthstone. Like I'm not. Yeah. So I feel like Mass Effect is just this ginormous investment for me, but I never felt that way with Horizon. So it's funny. Anyways, we're getting totally derailed.
It's good news. You'll never have to finish it. That'll be the last Mass Effect experience you'll ever have.
Yeah, that's kind of the other piece that I didn't put it in here. But so the Montreal studio responsible for Mass Effect Andromeda has essentially been dismantled-ish. There's kind of a skeleton crew that's being left behind to support Mass Effect multiplayer. Some people are being moved out to Edmonton, some to Austin. As far as I understand, at least from the article, nobody's losing jobs. They're being kind of redistributed throughout the company, working on currently unnamed new IP that has a code name, but you know, code names never end up meaning anything, so what does it matter? So basically there's some new IP that is being worked on, so the team is being redistributed. There are no plans to do anything for Andromeda, so
it's and you definitely took like the hard line, I don't want to say negative, but sort of like the really the negative side of it. And you know, there are commenters out there that's like, oh, you know, this is just an article, this is just people saying things in the know. But really, when you look at this, it certainly doesn't spell something positive, because normally when a game launches, especially like Mass Effect, the first thing you hear about is, here's the first piece of DLC you can purchase. And with Mass Effect 3, that was certainly the case, in that here's the first piece of DLC you
can download. Well, they had a season's pass, too. Yeah, they had DLC, and then they had the season's pass that were available right away.
Yeah, I can't even remember if there was a season pass or not, but I do remember being able to purchase DLC pretty much right away. And with Andromeda, it looks like that building, that Montreal building, actually shares space with another EA studio that's working on Battlefront 2, and they've basically moved a majority of the folks that were in Montreal, which was a lot. They just launched a giant open world game, moved them over to Motive. So it's a negative in that they're not talking about them working on the next Mass Effect, but it's a positive in that they've been reallocated. And the really crappy part about all this, and the reason it got me so down, was the fact that they have set up, there's like articles out there saying like, oh, Andromeda is supposed to be just this, you know, this game that exists. It's a self-contained story. It's not a new trilogy. Very cagey, as if they saw this coming. And then when you finish the game, it's like, nah, like, we're going to sell you DLC.
There's a cliffhanger, yeah.
There are several of which it's like, you know, you half expect them to prompt you to give them $9.99 to download that content. And it's not, and knowing it's not going to be there ever, I mean, in a story sense, they could easily just, you know, jump back to the Milky Way and say, ignore that. That's, don't even go near. So in that sense, it's frustrating. Like, I don't think this is the last Mass Effect game we'll ever play, but a lot of people are looking at this like Dragon Age 2 to Inquisition, where they had a misstep and they took some time, they refocused the team, they went back to the drawing board, listened to feedback, and built a game that answered a lot of the issues that people had with that other game. It took time. It took a lot of dark, you know, going dark. You know, there wasn't a lot of talk of the franchise. And really, like, when you think about it, maybe that's what the franchise needs, because they didn't go dark. They literally, they had that ending of Mass Effect 3, and then they had the DLC they sold you, and then they started talking about the continuation Andromeda. Of the franchise. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And maybe it does need to be put on ice for a little bit, but that's super sad, because it's like my favorite franchise, you know. So it was just really unexpected news, especially after at the earnings call, they talked to BioWare was talking about how you know, we look forward to working, showing off our new IP at E3, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's talk that Dragon Age is right around the corner as well. And it's just, it was kind of unexpected, but also expected in the same light, because EA is a company that likes to make money. And, you know, they've killed not stronger performing franchises, but they've certainly slowly killed strong performing franchises. I'm looking at you, Dead Space. It's just, it sucks, because you want people like Nintendo and Blizzard that look at their franchise and say, like, okay, we had a misstep, let's figure this out, let's build something that people are going to love based on feedback. And sometimes they do it and sometimes they don't, but they don't ever like scrap a beloved franchise. And I feel like EA is notorious for that. They've done it multiple times in the past, and they don't have a lot of like, look at The Sims and SimCity. Like, they've basically just given up on something that has been a beloved franchise for decades. It's so sad.
I agree. Yeah. As a fan of The Sims and SimCity and everything else, I 100% agree. They rode that into the ground. I'm looking at it that way. I'm happy that they're doing what they're doing with Mass Effect. They tried something new. It didn't work. So they're kind of putting it on ice, as opposed to what they did with The Sims and SimCity, which is basically like, how can we release the most bare bones thing that we possibly can, and people will still keep giving us money? Like, they just chopped it down and down and down and down and down, and got rid of people, shut down Maxis, like, just totally rode it into the ground. And I'm so happy that they're not doing that with Mass Effect. They're reallocating people. Maybe eventually people will be reallocated back. So at least Andromeda is an offering in the Mass Effect franchise that's a little bit palatable. Like, you know, you can take it. It was pretty good. It had its ups, it had its downs. But, you know, like, in the end, it could be worse, guys.
Oh.
Mass Effect could be the next Sims, so...
They could straight up murder it. Like, take it into, you know, the gaming public at E3 and just be like, yep, no more Mass Effect. And they're not doing that. And this isn't even... The official word from EA in these stories is basically... it's PR garbledygook, but it still reads as if, you know, Mass Effect is an important franchise and we will blah, 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 blah. And I think with Dead Space, they basically said, like, nah, we ain't making more of those, you know? And you know, there was a little bit more PR spin to it. But I don't think BioWare is going to leave this alone. Like, BioWare will certainly put together a case to make another Mass Effect. And I just feel like they'll do it less publicly this time. We'll get a reveal in probably 3 years. I'm sure they'll have another Mass Effect. And it's just kind of sad to think that between now and then, we'll be thinking, man, I'm not going to get to continue my 70-hour adventure. That was the whole point of Mass Effect, was continuing. Anyways, yeah. I don't know. It's a bummer, but it's also a Kotaku article, so it's not official. It's just sort of like strongly hinted at. So, yeah.
Fair enough. We wanted to remind everyone, we have a patron ad from Simon this week, who says, Geekly News Desk is a podcast all about geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. You can find them on iTunes or at geeklynews.com. That's going to do it for us this week, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at Joss Plays. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/AmoveTV. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about Prey, the demo, or about your expectations of new games coming out and who you should blame when they totally flop, please email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.